you want really good coffee to take on your next adventure, use CS Instant Coffee. You can find out more about them at csinstant.coffee.
You're talking about 90, 95 temperature, 90, 95% humidity. You're driving on these trails that have vines grabbing your handlebars and your foot pegs. I could only ride for about 15 to 20 minutes at a time.
This is the Adventure Sports Podcast, where we hear stories of adventure from every corner of the planet. We interview all sorts of folks who are using their sport to explore the world around them and give you the inspiration you need to get out there and have some fun. If you talk to me for very long about adventure, the Pan American Highway is going to come up at some point. I'm definitely fascinated with it. I've had the pleasure of cycling a portion of it, and I just fell in love with the road. And if you don't know what it is, it's this network of roads that essentially go from the very southern point of Argentina, South America, all the way up to the northern point of North America in Alaska. And it's basically a network of roads that is considered the Pan American Highway. And depending on which way you go, it's between 15,000 and 19,000 miles. And it's continuous all for 160-mile stretch called the Darien Gap on the Colombian-Panama border. And the road just stops. And there's a number of reasons. You know, there's some protected folks in those areas, just, you know, some very isolated group of people. It's really thick jungle, not a great place to build a road. And now folks just kind of don't want to build a road to keep it raw and wild and bare, because if, you know, that road was continuous, it would become quite a thoroughfare for folks. So today we're actually talking to somebody who has crossed that Darien Gap, that 160-mile gap. And when you know it's 60 miles straight, but when you try to cycle it, or, you know, motorcycle through it in this case, or hike through it, it ends up being closer to 100 miles, just depending on how you go and make it through the way through the jungle. So JD Smith is who is being interviewed today. This episode is from 3.5 years ago. It's a revisited episode, and Travis, one of the former hosts, is the one hosting this. And if you didn't know, there used to be other hosts of the show. I took it over about 1.5 years ago. But anyway, hope you enjoy this episode and it inspires you to get out there and do something this weekend.
Welcome back to another episode of the Adventure Sports Podcast. This is Travis. If you know what the Darien Gap is, you know that most travelers opt to go around it by boat or over it by plane. But today's guest, JD Smith, decided to go through the 99-mile jungle by motorcycle instead. Needless to say, this is not your ordinary two-wheeled adventure. JD, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Travis.
So let's dive in. You and I were chatting a little bit before the interview about, you know, how we each ended up on motorcycles as kids, and we both had the Trail 50 experience, as I think probably 50% of motorcycle riders must have as their first experience on a motorcycle. So fill us in on how it is you got started and your love for motorcycles, how that got kicked off.
Okay, great. Yeah. So when I was 8, I had a Trail 50 on the family ranch in southeastern Washington State. Then as I got into high school and college, didn't ride a lot, rode friends' bikes and would do things like that. But when I turned 30, about 15 years ago, I got into motorcycling pretty seriously, mostly street motorcycling, touring. I would get on my bike and just drive for days and go explore things. And I was reading the book Proficient Motorcycling, and the author mentioned that dirt riding was a great skill set for motorcycling. So I bought a dirt bike, and I met some dual sport friends and just went off and started exploring. And right now I have a CRF 450X in the garage and a BMW 1200 GSA. So I definitely prefer the dual sport touring adventure bikes.
It sounds like you got your interests honed in just like I did as far as wanting something to go off in the dirt. Now, you're down in Arizona like we talked, so you probably have quite a bit of riding trails down there where you don't have to touch much pavement.
Yeah, and interesting how I went from a touring bike, which was my BMW LT, to the dual sport adventure bike GS. I was my other job is real estate, and I was looking at some property, and I dropped my LT in a sandy wash, and I'm like, you know, I need a dual sport. And so I, at the same time, this is in 2003, I thought I wanted to go down to Ushuaia. So I bought a 03 GSA, and that's how I converted to dual sporting, was dropping my LT in the sandy wash.
That'll do it. So did you ever make it down to Ushuaia?
I have. I in fact, that is one reason why I decided to do the Darien Gap, is because I've flown my motorcycle, my 03 GSA, in both 03 and 04. I flew it across the Darien Gap from Panama to Bogota. And then the first time in 03, I actually got in an accident in northern Peru. So I flew my bike back from northern Peru to Miami, and then it was shipped over to Arizona. But then in 04, I was actually able to go all the way down to Ushuaia and back, and was actually able to, there's back in 04, there was legal ways to get permits to Cuba. So I was able to go to Cuba and spend 2 weeks on my GS touring the country.
That's cool. So all these times, or these few times that you flew over the Darien Gap, I have a hard time imagining flying over it and knowing what the Darien Gap is and the dangers that lie within, and thinking, boy, next time I really want to ride my motorcycle through there. So how did that transpire in your head?
The book Obsessions Die Hard by Ed Culberson. He, in 1986, he drove his R80 GS through the Darien Gap. There's 5 documented motorcyclists who have transited the Darien Gap. I'm one of them, but the prior 4 that I know were documented was a group of guys on Rokons, the two-wheel drive motorcycles.
Right.
And they did it in the 70s. And there was 2 explorers, Ed Culberson and, Helge Petersen, in the 80s, that did it on R80 GSs, and then a man named Lauren Upton in the 90s, he did it on a Rokon. And then since the late 90s, I don't know of any documented cases of crossing the Darien Gap. So I read his book, Obsessions Die Hard. His book is based on his love of the Pan American Highway. Pan American Highway runs from Alaska to Argentina, 30,000 miles, and it's interrupted by a 100-mile gap of the jungles of Panama and Colombia. And so in reading his book, I was like, I want to do that someday. And in 2003, 2004, I went ahead and flew around, but I was like, one day I'm going to do it. So I started researching the couple that was in the book, Obsessions Die Hard. I found them real life, and so I started meeting with them and interviewing them and figuring out how I would do it. And just this January, I finally came up with the time and the money and the kind of the motivation. What one part of my motivation was a marketing stick for my tour company, but I would say 60 to 70% was personal. It was just the mountain was there and you wanted to climb it.
Right. Well, that's pretty ambitious. How's it feel to be one of 5 people that have ridden a motorcycle through there after all these years?
It's pretty cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, it's a small part of your life, but you know, beyond just the pride of being the 5th motorcyclist documented, at least. I'm sure there's others that didn't document, but the 5th documented motorcyclist. It was just a magical area because I had been planning for 12 years. I feel like I prepared well for it, and after it was all said and done, there was one thing I wish I had brought, and that was some antihistamine, because
I can imagine.
you're hiking through the jungle and riding through the jungle, and you're getting bit by the bugs, at nighttime you're in the mosquito net, but at nighttime you're just sitting there with nothing to do but scratch. And if I'd had the antihistamine, it would have calmed that down. So that's, of all the things I wish I'd brought, it was that.
Number one Darien Gap traveler tip is antihistamine. I can get that. I don't know if I would have thought about that on my own trip.
No, I will get that next time.
No doubt. Okay, so before we jump into the meat of the trip itself, let's walk through the preparation a little bit. You just said that you spent 12 years preparing for this, and I think rightfully so. What I'd like to do is talk a little bit about what the Darien Gap is. There might be some folks out there who really don't understand the enormity of what we're talking about here. So describe what the Darien Gap is and why this is such an ambitious project.
Okay, I'll explain a little bit about the Darien Gap, and then I'll jump into my preparation over the 12 years. But the Darien Gap is a 100-mile gap in the Pan-American Highway. So as you're heading south from Alaska, you get to Panama City. You go 150 miles more, and you get to a town called Yavista. That's the end of the paved dirt road of the Pan-American Highway. Another 100 miles south of there is in Colombia, and you have the pavement or the dirt road beginning again, and it continues all the way down to the southern tip of South America to a community called Ushuaia. And so that 100-mile gap, there's a couple ways you can cross it. You can cross it with putting your bike in the dugouts and put it on the water highway, and that cuts the 100-mile gap down to roughly a 20-mile gap, because you have 30 miles of water highways at the end of the road highway. And then you then enter a town called Paya. And at Paya, you're then on village trails. So to cross the Darien Gap on foot or bicycle or motorcycle is relatively easy related to a four-wheel transit of the Darien Gap, which has been done. A four-wheel transit of the Darien Gap requires a lot of tree moving and bushwhacking, whereas I was able to go through on a small bike we can talk about later and stay on mostly the foot trails that would go between Panama and Colombia and the villages. So then in the Darien Gap, there's no government influence or activity. So during that 20 miles, there was no government protection. In fact, I was turned around when I tried to go from south to north because the end of the government influence, they said they didn't want a North American dying on their watch. So I actually successfully transited from the south to the north, and we can get into that later too. But the center front, which is the Panamanian border police, turned me back in Paya initially, so I had to come back from the south to the north. Then from Paya to a town called Singapore in Colombia, it's all basically managed by the Colombian anti-government rebel group called FARC, and it's their mountain. And the guide that I hired was a Panamanian National Park, Darien National Park guide. And so he was familiar with FARC and had friends that were in FARC. And he said, you know, you have to respect them and know that they're mountains. So that's a description of the Darien Gap. Do you want me to jump into the preparation, or do you have questions on that?
Yeah, no, go ahead and talk about the preparation. And then as we discuss your travels through, we might visit the FARC again.
Okay. So the preparations started. Probably preparation started in my head as soon as I read the book. I was, it became my obsession. Obsessions Die Hard. I saw it as a challenge. I began thinking about how I could do it. There's a couple ways you can do it. You can do it almost solo if you wanted to, and you could bring pulleys and, you know, the terrain that you couldn't ride up or the trees that you couldn't ride over. You could use pulleys to get over those obstacles, or you can use the local inhabitants and hire them as porters. I chose I chose the porters, but let's continue into the preparation. So I started thinking about how I could do it, and then I began interviewing Patty Upton, who had done the Darien Gap with four wheels with her husband in the 80s, then had walked alongside of her husband as he did in the 90s with a Rokon, and had actually hiked with friends through the Darien Gap in the 90s also. And as I was planning with her, she's like, hey, my daughter, you know, lives half time in Panama, and you know, maybe she would want to go with you. And so it was kind of cool to transit the Darien Gap with the daughter of a valid Darien hero. And so her name is Carrie, and she and I were kind of transit partners, I guess.
Cool.
And so let's see, preparation. I you know, I had all of my video and photographic equipment, my battery backups. I had all of the hard drives, the food. When I landed in Panama, I had acquired a brand new Suzuki AX100, which is a 190-pound two-stroke drum brake, double drum brake. I call it a Pizza Hut delivery bike. And people ask, hey, it really was. It was like a third world country beauty. It was like simple and hardworking, and it was a perfect fit for my task, because I wanted to be able to say, or not be able to say, I just wanted to be able to complete on motorcycle from Dead Horse, Alaska to Ushuaia, and this 100-mile gap I had not done. So we actually carried, I loaded up both ourselves and our backpacks and our equipment on this little bike and drove the 150 miles from Panama City to Javita. And then, so it was able to be on the highway and also do decent. it wasn't an enduro, but it did decent in the jungle. So we purchased that bike. And then when we got down there, she had found this man who was a guide for the national parks, the Darien National Parks, and so we hired him. And then I actually started out with four porters, and so, you know, we had to research them and find, you know, who would want to you know, help us transit. That's the most I can think about on the prep.
Time for a quick message break. CS Instant Coffee is definitely the best instant coffee I've ever had. In fact, just out of convenience and how good it tastes, I decided for the last year I've been taking it on every single adventure I go on, from backpacking to bike tours, just from convenience sake. It's really high quality and it keeps me from having to take a bunch of other equipment out in the woods. But it's not just for going out on adventures. My wife actually takes some to work every single day with her. She takes a couple packs to refill her coffee mug as a teacher. She doesn't have a ton of time to have to, you know, make fresh coffee all the time. So she just needs a little hot water, can pour the coffee in, and she's ready to go for her next class and not waste a lot of time. So if you're crunched for time in your job, I would definitely suggest giving it a shot, because they have been huge supporters of the show for the last year, and I really appreciate everything they've done for us, and it would mean a lot to me to go support them. So if you're interested, go to csinstant.coffee and support those who are supporting the show. It would go a long way. Thank you. All right, let's get back to the episode.
So, like I said, we would visit the FARC again. I guess that's probably the most intriguing piece of this. I mean, you rode through the Darien Gap, which is not an easy ride. I don't care what kind of bike it is. You know, even on this little 100cc two-stroke thing you took, we're talking about jungle, swamp, mountainous terrain. And that in and of itself is a major feat to accomplish, but just going through an area that's protected by a guerrilla army like that has got to bring its own amount of uncertainty and fear. How did you address that? I know you went through with a guide, but mentally, I have to think that I still wouldn't be quite settled enough to go through with it.
Well, you've definitely put your finger on my biggest concern for the 12 years I was planning this, and as I was entering the jungle, I actually I'm not wealthy, but my dad is pretty wealthy, And so I actually, I had my real, my background's real estate. So I had my, my real estate attorney, who's a personal friend, I had him on speed dial. So if anything happened, my girlfriend, who was on the other end of my satellite communicator, would call Bruce right away, and Bruce was prepared to negotiate, and access any money that might be needed. FARC isn't looking to kill you. FARC's just looking to fund themselves. And so, one of my friends, Glenn Hegstad, he wrote a book called Two Wheels Through Terror. He was actually captured by FARC in 02 and 03 and marched around the jungle for 5 weeks. So, you know, they're looking to fund their enterprise. You know, he was released without payment, at least that's the official, word, but, you know, it's not a big risk to be killed. And especially in the jungle like that, he was captured in Medellin. I'm in the middle of the jungle. They're not used to, you know, capturing people in the jungle. It's more the bigger cities where they're looking to fund their enterprises, but they were a concern. And that's one reason why I chose my transit path and timing. There's, as I mentioned to you, there's two ways you can do the Darien Gap, overland. One, you can do the full 100 miles of, overland, and that takes about 6 weeks, or you can, in which there's only one motorcyclist that has done that. The other motorcyclists, for various reasons have combined the water taxi or the water highway with their transit like I did. But the 20 mile section was a quicker transit. And I've done around 400,000 miles in 15 years and been to 60 countries. And so, and I've not run into any trouble of significance. And one reason I've done it is because I believe it's because I don't spend a lot of time just, you know, hanging out in the bad areas. There's a Swedish guy who, in Colombia was attempting to cross the Darien Gap, but spent too much time in Rio Sucio, and FARC shot him in the head thinking he was a foreign spy. So, speed, I think is important. Safety is important because two of the men that have crossed the Darien Gap actually broke bones, doing it. So, you know, you can't go so fast that you get hurt. But, FARC was definitely my biggest concern. And, I mitigated in my mind by, you know, hiring a guide who knew them, interacted with them on a, you know, monthly basis, so to speak. And then also, by, you know, speed. And, you know, like I said, I had my backup to hopefully, you know, negotiate with them before it got to the U.S. and the Colombian governments, because as soon as they got involved, they wouldn't allow, you know, payoffs, and it got more complicated, but nothing happened there, of course.
Right. Yeah, I was going to bring up the Swedish backpacker, you know, because he was a well-known case of you know, somebody having gone through there and not coming back out. So it's interesting that you, you know, described how he actually died, because I had read that, you know, he was confused with a spy. So your thought is that he basically lingered for a little bit too long and brought attention to himself?
Yeah. Like I said, Glenn Hegstad is a friend of mine, the Striking Viking, but, to some extent, I think maybe that's why he ran into a little trouble. Also is because, you know, he was spending more time, you know, kind of in the country than I did. When I traveled through Colombia three times in 03 and 04, I didn't spend a lot of time hanging out. You know, it was a well-known dangerous country, and I was there to explore and then move on. So I think that's an important aspect. I think his name was Jan. He was shot in the head, outside of Rio Sucio, which is a well-known, kind of, haven of FARC.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, and I would say if listeners want to go back and listen to Glenn's interview about being captured, go check that one out too. Just look in the episode categories under the motorcycle section and find him there. That was definitely an interesting interview. They knocked him around for about 5 weeks and let him go, and his buddies basically brought him a new bike, and he continued on. So very, very interesting. Okay, so let's get into some of the stories about actually going through there. So we've gotten prepared. We've gotten our guide, and we've obviously gotten permission from the FARC. And actually, tell me a little bit about that as far as getting permission and the okay to pass through. How does that work? And again, how do you feel like you're, how are you confident enough to go ahead and go through with it, thinking that the person that you're dealing with is on the up and up and all that?
Well, as far as permission from FARC, I did not formally get that. It is their mountain, and you have to respect that. But I did not sit with FARC and get permission. The people I did sit with was Centerfront, the Panamanian Border Police. And I knew as I was heading south that I would need their permission. But my preliminary research in Panama said, no, it's a free country, you can go. And when I got to the Centerfront terminus in Paya, they said, no, Panama City said you can go, but that's a different battalion. We're the Yavista battalion, and we say you can't go. So I actually, through satellite communicators and a cell phone that had WhatsApp access, one of the villagers let us use, we had Carrie's father go all the way up to the director of Centerfront, which is answers to the president. And they're like, no, we're not letting you through. I said, okay. So I said to the battalion head there in, well, the chief of the Centerfront group there, I said, what if I come through the other way? Are you going to have a problem with that? He's like, no, no problem. And the logic I came up with is basically if they allowed me to go through those 10 miles to the Colombian border and FARC gave me a hassle or killed me, they would, get all kinds of hassle from the U.S. and media and that type of thing for allowing it to happen. Whereas if I came in from the Colombian side, they would have no control and therefore no liability for anything that might happen to me. So I actually spent 2 days in Paya trying to negotiate. I thought about just, going on without permission, but I decided not to. And I reversed my tracks and went to San Blas Island and hired a boat to Turbo and then actually entered the Darien successfully from Colombia to Panama. So did not have permission, but I am wanting to take other people if they're ever interested. And my guide, Isaac, said that if we did more than one bike, we would probably have to sit with FARC. And by the way, I don't know if you've been following, but FARC and Colombia have been trying to come to a peace, and the voters in Colombia voted down the peace agreement
just
in the last few weeks.
Yeah, just last weekend they missed it by, it was pretty much a 50-50 vote, but it just barely failed that the peace agreement referendum. That'll be interesting to see what comes of that.
Yeah, I've thought about it if it was passed, and I really think you have these career warriors, these guys that know nothing but being in the jungle and carrying arms. There's other groups that they could join, so I don't know that they're gonna readily re-enter society. I think they'll still be a problem, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I was watching some documentaries on it, and that's exactly part of it is, these guys are saying, well, I don't really know how to be a civilian. I can't imagine putting down my arms and going into some civilian life and starting a life over again. So no, I won't lay down my arms. And this thing has been going on for 52 years, and we might very easily see another 52 without issue.
Correct.
All right, so let's talk about the passage itself. We like to go into stories about times when things were great and then times when things weren't so well. So maybe you start off with the time that things didn't go quite right. Did you have something to tell about that? Maybe a time that didn't go right, or time where you felt a little sketchy or uncomfortable about your decision?
Well, I think probably the most difficult time for me wouldn't be something that most people would think about when they think about the Darien Gap and FARC and a motorcycle transit. It was actually an interpersonal relationship. The gal that I went through with, she was an explorer in her own right. She was 35 years old, and I'd never met her prior to me landing in Panama. And she told me straight away, she's like, you know, a 2 to 3 week commitment's a big one for me. And we expected it to be 2 or 3 weeks. And so we made it 2.5 weeks. And the last night in the jungle, she and I got in an argument and she actually left. She only had 2.5 hours left to hike out to where she was, to the water highway, but she left and we haven't talked since. So that was an unfortunate ending to our transit of the Darien Gap, was that breakdown in our relationship and of 2.5 weeks, our relationship of 2.5 weeks. And it was so that was probably the most frustrating or disappointing of my transit. The bike ran well. The workers worked hard. Everything I brought took care of what I needed. Like I said, if the only thing after 12 years of planning was I wish I had some antihistamine, I feel like I did a pretty good job of planning.
Well, that's a good thing. So what about the terrain itself? Like we talked about, you had this 100cc Suzuki, what would you say, 190 pounds? That's a pretty light bike, so good choice to go through there. But this is not easy terrain. So how is it to cross this with the mountains and the jungle?
Yeah, so anybody that wants to cross the Darien Gap with a motorcycle, I tell them two things. One, start at the trailhead with an enduro dirt bike, because I couldn't cross a lot of the terrain or go up a lot of the mountains that a dirt bike could do. And then I also recommend a lot of cross training. You need to be terribly fit, because you're talking about 90, 95 degrees temperature, 90, 95% humidity. You're driving on these trails that have vines grabbing your handlebars and your foot pegs, and you're going over sloppy, wet logs and rocks and mud, and I could only ride for about 15 to 20 minutes at a time before I was completely exhausted. Now, if I'd been more fit, it would have been better. If I'd been on a dirt bike versus a pizza delivery bike, it would have been better. And the bike performed well. The only thing that was happening was the brake pedal and the shifter lever kept bending back 180 degrees, but something about that metal, it never broke. I could bend it right back and it'd keep trucking. So
a pliable bike. Take a pliable bike.
Yeah. Yeah. Good with their calisthenics.
That's funny. Now you said, I think I saw that you said Paya was your favorite village you had come across. And I think maybe that was the YouTube videos I saw of you riding kids around. Was that right?
Yeah. So, as soon as you enter the Darien and enter the water highway, you pass by various villages, some with more blacks, some with more, of the Kuna Indians, and, some poor, some richer. And Paya was definitely the prettiest, wealthiest Kuna town. And it was the end of the water highway, so it was magical in that sense. Because as you get further up the river system, you can no longer power up. You have to pull up. The waters are so shallow that they're using poles to get over the rocky part. But you get into the village, and I spent about 2 hours riding 4 to 5 kids on the bike. They would jump on, and 2 or 3 minutes later, I would tell them to change, and more kids would jump on. And so that was actually one of my favorite kind of village experiences. But so I think it's just the beauty and the solidarity, or the solitude, end of the road type of community, and just the experience with the kids was kind of the best part of that community. Plus, it wasn't awfully poor, whereas there's a lot of those communities that were just kind of dusty, dried up little towns.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine. So that was one of the things that kind of surprised me. And, you know, we're naive about things until we research them. And And admittedly, I was naive about the Darien Gap. And, you know, in my imagination is just a bunch of dense jungle and mountains and swamps without much life other than the FARC tromping around and doing bad things. So as you research something, you realize there's a lot more to it, obviously. And one of the things I realized was that this is not just a dense jungle with mountains and soldiers that are going to do bad things. There's a lively community here. There's a lot of little villages intertwined within the Darien Gap. So it was kind of a neat realization.
Correct. Yeah, I didn't know exactly what to expect before I got into it either. I knew, you know, I had my book knowledge of what I expected, but until I got there, I had no idea, you know, what the Black communities, the African communities look like versus the Indian communities and the poor versus the richer communities. But yeah, there's a active village trail system. And by the way, a little side note, interesting side note, a lot of American intent immigrants actually transit through the Darien Gap, around 50,000 a year on foot. They enter in Ecuador, and their intent is to get into America, and they actually walk through the Darien Gap. And we ran into two of their bodies, actually, because, like, similar to the Mexican or the Latin American immigrants in the Arizona deserts or New Mexico deserts, they're not prepared for the heat and the exhaustion, and they pass. And we ran into two of those on the trail.
Yeah, that's probably not a very good sight on your trip, that's for sure. Yeah, there is a lot of migrant traffic, immigration, you know, coming through that area. All right, well, I wanted to give you some time to talk about your tour company. You alluded to it earlier, so it's RTW Motor Tours. And one of the neat things about this is your company is also doing Darien Gap crossings for people that want to go through and try it themselves. So between that and some of the Cuba tours, I'd like to hear more about that.
Okay. So yeah, a few years ago, I began a tour company. It's called RTW Around the World Moto Tours. We offer on four continents tours on motorcycles, and anywhere from, you know, 100cc motorcycles up to full dress Harleys in Cuba. And we have Iceland, Morocco, Cuba, the Baja up to Alaska. We have, you know, three or four guides in our company. A couple of them might be considered celebrities. One, Alex Chacon of Modern Motorcycle Diaries, and the other one is Chris Baker of Mi Moto Fidel, about his travels in Cuba on his GS in I think it was 1996.
Yeah, I had seen Chris Baker as I was doing a little bit of research, and he's supposed to be a pretty good expert on Cuba. And actually, I wanted to talk to you more about that too. I mean, with the hurricane having just beat the snot out of Cuba, how do tours look like over there? Have you seen enough reports back from the damage?
I just talked with Chris today, and he said that he has to cancel some of his trips because of the damage. And so, you know, I don't have the details, but I do know that he guides actively for around 8 months out of the year in the Darien. I'm sorry, in Cuba, and a number of his tours have been canceled because of the damage.
Okay. So describe I want to get back into the Darien Gap tours as well, but describe the Cuba tours a little bit. Again, I mean, as Americans, most of us haven't had a chance to get over there and see what it's about. So can you describe a little bit about that, what somebody might expect when they're over there on a motorcycle tour?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, in 2004, I was able to take my motorcycle there, and since legally through different permits that are allowed, but then for almost anyone, in 2011, Obama authorized what we call people-to-people for Americans, where as long as we're interacting with the locals, we're authorized to travel to Cuba legally and have those interactions. And it's a 800-mile long island. And in 2004, I was able to do 2,500 miles and pretty much see every corner and you know, from the tobacco growing regions in the west to one morning I woke up overlooking a bay where Columbus landed on his first tour of the Americas. And you're going to see, you know, how the communist government of Cuba, you know, handles the people and what their emphasis is, the medical and the infrastructure and the education, and unfortunately the uniform poverty of the country. They're a happy people, but they're a very poor people uniformly, and I guess that's maybe not too surprising in a true communist country.
Right. Well, it definitely gives a different depth and a way to travel, something else to see and experience life, you know, in another area, another society.
Oh yeah, it's a beautiful country and a lot of culture and from Old Havana to Guantanamo Bay and a lot of the colonial history you can see also.
Yep. Okay. Now about the Darien Gap tours that you are looking to put together. Let's talk about that a little bit, because this is probably not a tour for the faint of heart. It's something you probably need to be pretty prepared for. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So the Darien Gap tours will be for somebody that, you know, completely understands the risk associated both to from FARC and from the jungle transit. It was the hardest thing. My transit was the hardest thing I've ever chosen to do, but it was also one of the most beautiful places I've been and one of the most magical environments I've been in. So, you know, I want anybody that's interested in doing it to know that we'll do it with dirt bikes, and we will make sure that whoever does it is extremely capable. I have a rider coach that can test them for their ability off-road, and then also the I think it's somebody that, you know, wants to experience you know, something that very few people have done, and that is riding the Darien Gap with a motorcycle.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, that's an amazing opportunity. Well, if you want to go check out some of these tour options JD runs with his fellow motorcycle riders, go check out rtwmotortours.com and see what they have for you. Okay, well, I would like to leave off with a good story, you know. So we've talked about some scary things and uncomfortable topics dealing with the FARC and things that can happen down there. But what's an amazing story about something that came out of this trip?
Well, I think it was beyond just the realization of a dream, there was some pretty cool happenings. You know, I had a number of porters that were with me, and after the first few days, I was able to get them running well and get the whole group transiting well, and we would normally run from around 6 in the morning till around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and one day we shut off a little early, and we were in the middle of the Darien, and I found this kind of secluded section of the creek we were in, and was able to get washed up, and I looked up, and there's this big fallen tree, and it had moss and little trees growing on top of it. It was just a beautiful picture, and that was probably, you know, one of the most memorable or magical, you know, environments was that afternoon after a few days in the jungle and working our butts off, just to have that little respite and that just the solitude of the Darien jungle.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Well, JD, man, it was cool to hear about this Darien Gap trip. It was definitely, I was intrigued in hearing the story. It's an area that many of us don't know much about. And the fact that you crossed it and the fifth documented person to do it on a motorcycle is pretty cool. So congratulations on that. And thanks for spending some time with me to tell me all about it.
Yep. Thank you, Travis. I appreciate it.
All right, guys, and go check out rtwmototours.com. Some of their tours are the Darien Gap, the Baja, Dead Horse Alaska, Cuba, Colombia, Peru, and looks like you guys even take some tips. If somebody wants to do a custom trip, they can let you know what they might want to do, and you guys can probably put something together for them. So.
Correct.
Good deal. All right, JD, well, you have a good evening. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Travis.
All right.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to the show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.